Well, welcome to Take Three. Yes, it's another podcast from us. Thank you for being a Vanguardista. A lot of sweat goes into setting the questions.
Blood, sweat and tears.
Yeah, because you think a lot about the stuff you want us to ask. And then we have to just answer whatever it is that you send in. Obviously filtered by within grounds of legality.
Within grounds. But it, and decency and taste.
Yes, it's a top feature because it has this as an intro. I do like that.
That's good.
I think that should win an award. Okay, here comes our first question. Please don't share my name. So this is quite a tough one to start with. Last month, I turned 50. I have been a regular show listener for some 20 years and grew up with Simon on Radio 1. And Mark always impressed me with his individual look when he turned up on television to introduce movies that I came to love.
Okay, so hang on. So he grew up with you on Radio 1 doing your thing. And the thing that impressed him about me, is my individual look. Not what I was saying then.
No. It's the way you looked.
It's the way I looked.
I have always loved movies and go some 50 times a year. 5 years ago, I was diagnosed with autism, which helped explain a lot.
Okay.
I love movie discussion, but I couldn't help picking up on Mark's comment on a recent discussion where he was explaining why he doesn't make a good interviewer, as he feels compelled to be honest and only now realized it doesn't help.
Right.
This reflects very closely my own very complicated journey through life, personal and especially work, where you are forced to get along with people just to make a living. To get to the point, when I give opinions on movies, more often than not, people act like I have personally insulted them. And sooner or later, they make it personal. As a result, I end up getting upset that I have caused upset somehow, and I leave, or even occasionally get banned. As a result, I find myself feeling isolated and unable to do what I feel, in a sense, compelled to do, as I desperately miss discussion, but I am running out of options. I just wondered if you had any advice or suggestions. So thank you very much for sending us the email. I feel as though we are both operating within certain restrictions, in as much as there is some help that we can give and there is some help that we're not qualified to give.
Yeah.
And you might think that you want to get a conversation with someone who's qualified, particularly as you said, you've been diagnosed with autism. So it may well be that someone who can, it might be a specialist who can help you more.
Yes.
Mark, what was your initial reaction? This strikes me as from somebody who desperately wants to get on with people.
Yes.
But in expressing whatever they think about movies has caused offence, mm-hmm. to the extent that they get banned.
Yes.
I'm not quite sure whether that means being banned from an online conversation or maybe a social position or a group of friendships. Anyway, so it's obviously quite extreme.
Okay. Well, the only advice I can give is this. I discovered fairly early on that part of what it is that I do involves – you know, making a judgment on something and then feeling very passionately that judgment matters. Was it Brian Clough, a footballer, who said football isn't a matter of life and death, it's much more important than that?
I think it was Bill Shankly.
Bill Shankly.
Bill Shankly, okay, Liverpool manager,
fine.
I think.
So,
but Brian Clough might have said something similar.
Yeah, Brian Clough said, I may not be the best manager in the world, but I'm definitely in the top one.
Yes, that is Brian Clough.
And one of the things about talking about movies, and this is why that football thing relates to it, is movies are inherently not very important. But if you're going to talk about them, you have to assume that they are important. So part of the thing about enthusiasm for movies, in the same way as enthusiasm for pop records or enthusiasm for anything, is you sort of, if you are interested in them, you become almost artificially unreasonable about that interest, because on some level there's a compensation for the fact that it's not a matter of life and death. I mean, if I go and see Avatar and I don't like it, so what? If I go and see something else, so what? As a critic, you do find yourself sort of, you know, constantly having to take the thing seriously. Now, I don't find this difficult because I do take it seriously, although I understand that seriousness is foolish. What I discovered fairly early on was that in social circumstances, unless I'm in a room with a bunch of other film critics who are similarly disposed, most people aren't they aren't on that level of, you know, taking the thing seriously. It's, you know, it's a movie. It's like, you know, it's like, hey, what do you want? Cheese and onion or salt and vinegar? It doesn't matter to me either way. And so I had to sort of find ways of tempering my own conversation. Otherwise, I would sit down with a group of people and I would ask them what they thought of a film. And then I would talk about what I thought of the film for the next 20 minutes, explain to everybody why they were wrong. I think when I was first working with you, Simon, I was like this, you know. And then they'd all think, well, that wasn't any fun at all. And, you know, why are you on that? What I discovered, and this may seem very, very obvious to everybody else, is a really useful way of diffusing this is to begin by asking other people their opinion first. So, for example, I've seen Avatar Way of Water. We know that I hate it. But if I was in a room with somebody, I'd say, have you seen Avatar Way of Water? Okay, if they say yes, what did you think about it? If they say no, oh, okay, did you see Avatar? Yes or no, what did you think of it? Or why didn't you see it? Because, you know, if Avatar Way of Water has just made 1.7 billion, everyone in the world is apparently going, what are you not interested in? Ask them questions and allow them to tell you what they think. And this does two things. Firstly, it allows them to speak rather than it sounds to me that part of the subtext of what you're saying is that, you know, I mean, I do this all the time. I talk over people. It's very rude and I do it. But the other thing is it gives you a lie of the land. Now, if you say to somebody, you saw Avatar Way of Water, what did you think? I loved it. I had such an immersive experience. I'd had a terrible week at work and it took me out of myself. And you know what? I went into work feeling really, really down. I'd been worried about money and I'd been worried about a lot of things. And then I went in for 3 hours. I was transported into another world. You will know that it's not then the moment to say, I think it's a piece of capitalist claptrap and just stamp all over this. And that would be the advice that I would give you.
Tempered by one thing, maybe.
Yes.
Ask them and also listen.
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 Because no, this is a part of a much broader conversation. But often conversation is you waiting for the other person to stop and then you just as right now I can say what I think. But if you do exactly what you've just said and go, that's interesting. Why did it make you think that?
Yes.
You've already established some kind of conversation. So I think so. That's a really, really good idea for our correspondent to use those to ask questions first of all, find
yes.
out what they thought,
yes.
And also to work out what you want out of a conversation ahead of time. You know, what do you want out of this meeting? If you think your views are going to be so forcefully expressed and uncomfortable, don't say them.
Yeah,
it's not that.
Sure.
It's not that important. If you have got banned from situations because of the force in which you said. Then don't say it. It's not worth crashing and burning.
I mean, another example would be, you know, Dead Poets Society. Well, I have no time for Dead Poets Society. I just think it's, you know, nonsense. There are some people for whom that movie is really, really important. If I was going to talk about Dead Poets Society, the first thing I'd do is say, do you like Dead Poets Society?
I did, actually.
Fine. In that case, it's not the moment for me to quote the thing about, you know, well, there's whatever. There are ways of talking. So, you like Dead Poets Society. Did you find it, you know, did it move you? Did it make you cry?
I found it emotionally engaging. And I found the ending where they're all deciding whether to stand up on their desks. We had a conversation afterwards saying, would you have stood up on the desk?
Okay, fine. And why do you think that it became such a sort of a touchstone cliche? It was a thing that people would kind of
seize the day, carpe diem.
Fine.
It gave them a catchphrase, and Robin Williams had a performance which was engaging.
Okay, well there we go. So that's different to me going Dead Poets Society.
What a load of rubbish!
What a load of old rubbish that movie. And again, there will be some of this in relation to the conversation surrounding The Whale, which is the film for which everyone thinks that Brendan Fraser is going to win
yes.
Best Actor,
and hopefully he's going to be on the show soon.
Fine. It'll be, that film will have very, very different, but some people will just think this is just a piece of fatuous nonsense. And some people will think this film has got something very, very profound to say about life. Find out in advance. And as you said, and this is the thing that I, without wishing to blow smoke, this is the thing that I think makes you a much better interviewer than me. Listen to the answer and then respond to the answer rather than saying the thing that you went in as a prepared statement to say.
So hopefully, look, that might be helpful, but it might be that you need some proper help from someone who actually knows what they're talking about.
Sure.
But thanks for getting in touch. Dear Man Behind the Mic and Lady in the Van. This is from...
This is how I've become. I've turned into Maggie Smith.
Rob Rose in Calvert Green, Leafy, Buckinghamshire. Long-term listener, occasional emergency mailer and committed member of the Vanguard, wanted to ask a question of the greatest minds in podcasting, if possible.
So he came to us instead.
That's right. I think you want the rest is history, but all you can get is us. Having recently enjoyed Glass Onion, a Knives Out mystery,
yes,
or Go Acom, as no one is calling it, it got me thinking about how rarely sequels live up to expectation, even ones that cost $1 billion to make. That said, when they do work, it can be magical in the company of wonderful characters and familiar settings. So my question is there a sequel you have always wanted but was never made? As you now include the wonderful world of cinema-adjacent television, I'd say I'd include continuing a TV show too, but there's only one correct answer to that, a proper final episode of Captain Scarlet and the Mysterons, if anyone was wondering. So films it is. That's very good. That could have been a fantastic end to Captain Scarlet.
Yeah, yeah.
Thanks for all your amazing content, it says here. Down with all that sort of thing and up with hardline centrism. So is there a movie that you wanted a sequel to, but there wasn't one? I can go first if you wish.
Well, you go ahead. Yeah, I'm struggling with that.
Master and Commander.
Oh, because of course there is a whole series of books.
There's a whole series of books. Master and Commander, Far Side of the World, Russell Crowe, Paul Bettany. I thought it was terrific and was thinking, okay, well, there'll be another one, but there wasn't.
Yeah, that's a very interesting case because a very good friend of mine took their young son to see Master and Commander. And I hadn't realized, I think, just how visceral some moments of it are. And at one point I had to take the young, I'm not young, you know, like 12, I think, or something, out of the cinema, maybe 15, however old it was, because the film became so overwhelmingly powerful. Also, I know people who have naval heritage and naval, you know, have been in the Navy, have been, you know, spent a lot of time, mm-hmm, who say that Master and Commander is the most accurate portrayal of what that life is or would have been like. Okay. So it wouldn't just be sequels, would it? Because it'd be prequels as well. Am I right in thinking that Master and Commander in the series of books?
Patrick O'Brien books, there's loads of them.
Okay. What would I like a sequel to?
I mean, maybe there isn't one.
I mean, I honestly struggle to think. I can think of lots of things that I didn't want a sequel to. I can think of lots of things that I didn't think I wanted a sequel to, and then got a sequel. I mean,
a different question that is.
That is different. Yeah, I don't think. I mean, one of the things that I love about a movie is when it ends and you want more of it, but you don't have it. So I don't think there's anything that I would specifically go, yeah, I really, really want the sequel. I can't remember the last time I sat around thinking, I really want more of that.
Babylon.
And on.
To be discussed next week. Steve Howe, a curmudgeon and holdover from the previous place.
I mean, I was going to say Twin Peaks, but then, of course, Twin Peaks did have its sequel because it came back via television, which then won the Sight and Sound Best Film of the Year award, which was an astonishing moment.
Steve says, dear Ms. Trunchbull and Miss Honey, I wonder if Mark would care to comment on a recent court case in America.
Really?
You know this one.
Okay, go on.
I mean, asking Mark to comment on a court case is dangerous territory, but I think this is fine. It's America, where two people successfully sued a studio because a certain actress appeared in a trailer, but not in the final cut of the film. I appreciate that the legal niceties are not the good doctor's area of expertise, but I wonder if he, like me, has noticed the increasing prevalence of this practice. Showing a character that doesn't appear at all is an extreme example, but I have lost count of films this year, films as diverse as Black Adam and The Woman King, which do not include material included in the trailer. Mm-hmm. Perhaps it's the nerd in me, but I am mildly irritated by this, although not to the extent that I would attempt to take a major studio to court. I mean, how utterly ludicrous to be so disappointed that you want to sue the film company.
I mean, it's there have been other cases in which people have sued movie companies on the basis that there was one that was for a trailer for a movie that looked like it had more driving in it than the film actually had. I think it might have been Drive, actually. Somebody complained that the movie was not the movie that was sold. The thing about scenes that are in trailers that aren't in movies, it's just a thing. There's a way of fetishizing it, which is, like, for example, if you see the original trailer for Exorcist 3, Legion, it's got the go motion head change sequence in it, which isn't in the film. So there's a thing in the trailer which you suddenly see the head writhing around and it's flashing all these different heads, and that's not in the film. Now, you could theoretically go, hang on, I paid to see the film because I wanted to see the go motion heads bit, but they took it out because it didn't work and it was a bit silly. It's just, I mean, I hate to say this, it's only a movie.
Yeah, get over it. For heaven's sake. Pete Sisson in Gloucester. Heritage listener, first-time emailer. I have a linguistics...
Can I just say, sorry, quickly, worse than that, much worse than that would be, sorry, and this used to happen a lot more, Linda Blair stars in Savage Island, okay? Mm-hmm. Right, so I'm a big Linda Blair fan, you know. Savage Island is not Savage Island. The front cover of Savage Island is Linda Blair on a Savage Island with a machine gun. And I think, okay, that looks great. When you see the film, what happens is Linda Blair walks into a room, not on the Savage Island, holds somebody at gunpoint and says, you did a terrible thing to my sister and I'm going to tell you the story. Then cuts to a whole other movie, an Italian movie, I believe, of some other people on a Savage Island and there's a bunch of stuff happening. And then at the end of it, cuts back to Linda Blair and she says, and that's why I'm going to shoot you. And then she shoots you. The front cover of that movie is Linda Blair. And when the first time I ever interviewed Linda Blair, I said, would you like to apologize for Savage Island? And she went, oh, please tell me you haven't seen Savage Island.
Thanks for mentioning that.
That's a different thing.
Pete Sisson from Gloucester, you remember him? I have a linguistics question that is cinema related. I went to see a sing-along version of the contractually obligated mouthful of a title, Roald Dahl's Matilda the Musical. And in the song The Hammer, the subtitles said that they needed to, quote, toe the line, T-O-W, the line, as opposed T-O-E, the line. Is this correct linguistically, as I had always assumed it was the latter? I can tell you what the answer is.
It's T-O-E, is it?
Pete, you're absolutely right. T-O-W is wrong. T-O-E is correct.
Yeah.
It is, because I was checking this last night, largely believed to be 18th century army and navy, probably the navy, when the sailors on the quarterdeck who were barefooted had to line up against the planks of wood and there's a seam in the wood and it's basically...
Toes up against the line.
So it's basically that. There are other theories, but all of them are T-O-E, the line, not T-O-W, the line. And so, Pete, you're right, and Roald Dahl's Matilda is wrong.
Boom.
Okay, Christine in Singapore. I listened to the latest questions drop on my way to the pool today. La-di-da. During a long swim... In anticipation of massive incoming Christmas calorie consumption, I pondered today's schmestion. What is the thing you have lost that you would like to find first in a box of lost things, which I think I won by saying the Rembrandt
that you've got somewhere in your house.
Over the hour, in the strange underwater time continuum, I found myself reflecting on how, as I get older, I realise that life is finite. The finish line is over there. Mm. If I imagine my finite life as a neat cardboard box, what's in it? Right next to the inevitable shattered dreams and contextual cynicism that comes with age, now I appreciate the little things that add so much sweetness. The coolness of a monsoon breeze, ooh, the first bite of a perfect tangy but sweet mango, and the joy of shouting, smelly pants wee.
Yeah.
So my schmestion is, what would you like to add into your box of life in this next year?
Well, can I give you the mawkish answer?
Well, you could give us whatever you want to say, really.
Well, I'm at a point in my life in which I'm, you know, I am feeling particularly mawkish. And, you know, like so many people of my age, you're at the point in which you lose people who are close to you and, you know, and all that stuff kind of brings everything closer and closer. And I would say that the thing that I would like to add to the box more is, I know this is a euphemism in politics, but I would like to spend more time with my family. That doesn't mean I'd like to be fired to spend more time with my family, or I'd like to step down because of some scandal. I mean, I genuinely, and the good lady professor, her indoors, and I have talked about this recently, about, and you'll appreciate this because you're in an extended family, you know, circumstance. There are moments when you have your family around you, and you suddenly realize in a way that you have never realized before because you were too busy worrying about other things, this is what happiness feels like.
Yeah.
And I, you know, it happened just briefly recently when we were all in the same place, we all end up putting our arms around each other for reasons which we don't need to go into. And I just remember in that moment thinking, this is it.
More of this in your
please.
Box.
Yeah.
I once asked, because I was doing a program for Radio 1, and it was I was talking to John Peel, and one of the questions was in this kind of questionnaire feature was, what is your idea of heaven? And John said, to be sitting in my garden, surrounded by, frankly, indifferent members of the family, with the promise of an Indian curry just around the corner. And I thought it was a really interesting answer, because it's basically exactly what you were saying, but it wasn't eating the curry, it was the promise
anticipation
and the
of
expectation.
It. Yeah, the anticipation of it, that's
and
lovely.
Dennis Healy and his wife used to have a thing together where he used to say, or I imagine now he would, the modern example would be you'd text AWL, but he would just say AWL to his wife, and it just meant, aren't we lucky? So it's sort of appreciation of what you have,
yeah.
I guess. I would like to eat more fermented food, because I've been convinced that is the secret to eternal life.
Tell me, what's the
plus
thing?
Also,
what's the thing?
Looking after your gut, kombucha, that kind of thing. You need to have more of it.
But fermented
food.
But why? What does the fermented food do?
I can't remember all the stuff, but it replaces.
Okay, the kombucha I like.
Yes. Well, you should drink more of it. That's the thing. Plus, also, and you were there this morning when I got a video FaceTime from Oscar, the small child. More of that, I think, which is basically
Oscar,
versions.
The small child, who smiled at me.
He did. Because he smiles.
He's
a very easy
smiler. No, I think
smiler.
He smiled at me because he recognised.
He's just learnt to shuffle backwards, so he can
he
be found
very
under the sofa. okay, so thanks for that question. John Ashton in Nottingham, new Vanguardista, long-time listener, first-time emailer. Your advice to an expectant parent on last week's show was wonderful, and my partner and I are listening to I'm a Little Dinosaur on repeat. And planning to watch Parenthood next week, because I think we suggested you absolutely have to watch Parenthood before you become a parent. We're going to be new parents in the new year, and as the subject is fresh in your mind, I thought I'd take this opportunity to ask a little more of you experienced dads. What were your favourite films to watch with little ones beyond the Disney-led usual? And if you each had one more piece of, how much more advice do you want? It really, really would be useful to those of us awaiting our firstborn. Any more pearls of wisdom? My only pearl of wisdom that occurred to me was, is the Tom Hanks quote, "This too shall pass," that when the endless bad nights of babies that just won't sleep and you just think it goes on and on, it's 3 months and you still haven't, it will pass. But to get some kind of context is very, very different. And my answer to the question, I've actually been thinking about it recently with the prospect of interviewing Brendan Fraser, you've already mentioned, The Whale. George of the Jungle was just fantastic.
George of the Jungle, watch out for that tree.
I don't know whether I should mention, I really, really want to, I haven't interviewed Brendan Fraser
before.
I'm
sure he's proud of it. It's a huge hit.
It's fantastic. But the other thing I would mention, if I can't mention The Jungle Book, because you said you can't mention Disney, but Parent Trap, the remake.
The Lindsay Lohan,
I think, was I mean, we had to watch that 1,000 times, I thought that was terrific.
Yeah, I mean, I'd like to say, Mary, what?
I just remembered.
What?
I remembered something, but I have to tell you later. Carry on. Lindsay Lohan.
Sorry, this is just really weird. You literally just moved as if somebody just jabbed you with an electric prop.
I remembered a thing, but I'll tell you about it in a minute.
Okay, so the Lindsay Lohan version of Parent Trap. It is Disney, but I watch Poppins once a week, I think, at least, with child one. And I think that was when my absolute obsession with it became cemented, because I saw it so many times in Hard Road. I must have watched it 50 times in a year. And I just started to think that Citizen Kane had nothing on it. And the Ghiblis as well, kind of quite early on, you'd be amazed at you would be amazed at how much kids get out of Ghibli that you don't see when you're an adult. I mean, obviously some of the Ghibli subject matter is kind of quite dark, but those films are just, they're an endless source of, I mean, if you start on Ponyo, if you start with something that's just so good-hearted as Ponyo, and you will come out of it singing Ponyo, but anyway, so that's lovely. And the only other...
It doesn't have a man swinging from a tree and hitting another tree with his
which
face.
Is always funny. But the other thing I would say is, in terms of the piece of advice, you said the thing about this too shall pass, and that is absolutely true. it's what I would say is the thing to remember is that you're saying, as in, you know, when you're really strung out, when you're really all those things, don't worry, it will pass. But it's also worth remembering this will pass, this moment, this stuff that's happening to you now will pass and you'll miss it.
Oh, yeah, the good stuff will pass as well, which is, I think, what Tom said.
No, precisely. But it's so if it's ever possible amidst the tiredness, and believe me, it may well be impossible because I have never been as tired as I was, you know, as a parent of young children. If it is possible to find a moment when you go, this is just miraculous, hang on to it because, you know, speaking from experience, you'll look back 20 years later and you will long for that moment.
Finally, Frankie in Houston. If band names were literal, what would be the worst concerts to attend? So I don't know where this question came from, Frankie, but the first one that came to my mind, I'm delving back into John Peel territory again, and mentioning him again. He had a band called Fetus on Their Breath, I think it was called. And I thought, that's not good. Literal thing.
I'll go for the old favourite, Einsteinsende Neubauten, which means collapsing new buildings.
That's not good.
Yeah, that's not good.
10,000 Maniacs.
That's very good.
You wouldn't want to.
Meatloaf.
Yes. here's another John Peel band. I'm keeping this right to the very end of take three.
Okay.
John Peel regularly played the Butthole Surfers.
Yes, that's right, he did.
If band names were literal, I'm not.
There's also a band out of the LA punk scene called the Circle Jerks, and you wouldn't want to see them play live.
Yes. I think we've probably done enough on that. If you've got a question or a smash, so the question is supposed to be film related. Oh, Napalm Death has been suggested. Yes, so many, in fact.
Megadeth.
So the questions are movie related. The schmessions are not movie related. Anyway, so we're going into all kinds of very interesting territory. Let us know, please. correspondence@kirbynamayo.com. Thank you. There'll be another one.
I am going to see the Brian Jonestown Massacre in Cornwall quite soon. And I'm now rethinking it.
Are they called the Brian Jonestown Massacre in Cornwall?
That's what they're called. Yes, that's right. Yes, that's the new version. It's a spin-off. They're like a folk band.
There'll be more shortly.